Hello and welcome in to the Tom Welch and Cameron Krutwig lineup. I mean, podcast 63 for another episode. It's season 3, episode 11. We have some games to talk about. One good one, one bad one this week. Our team was thrown into a tornado of sorts this week when they found out late that they were not going to be facing undefeated Drake. Instead, we were going to be traveling to Terre Haute to play Indiana State. So we're going to talk about how that worked out and kind of the fallout of having a one-on-one week and what else is going on in the Valley. Lou, are you ready and willing to talk about the team this week?
I'm ready and willing as much as Porter is ready and willing to play both Cameron and Tom Welch together.
So only a little bit at the end once he's tried everything else.
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Well, we got a good episode for you all this week, so make sure to stay tuned. And don't forget, go Blurs.
He jumps, he passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots off the rim. Brown gets it, scores. It's over. It's over. We won. We won the ball game. Viola won the ball game. Oh, we won 60-58.
And welcome back. All right, so like we mentioned earlier, this week we were going to be playing Drake, who is undefeated and is in first place in the Missouri Valley so far. But they did have some COVID cases pop up. And so because of that, the series was postponed for Loyola and Drake. And unlike the last time when we had a series postponed just the week before, the Missouri Valley did find us another opponent. Indiana State was supposed to play Southern, I believe, Southern Illinois, and likewise Southern had positive COVID tests. So it ended up that we just changed opponents. We ended up playing Indiana State. Indiana State played us, and it was, I'm sure, super difficult for the team, for both teams involved. And the first thing I kind of want to talk about actually is that very, like, idea, like the idea of changing changing opponents super late into the week. And I'm curious to get your opinion on this, Lou, because I tweeted mine out. I tweeted out just the other week just how actually Todd Golden, who is the beat writer for Indiana State, he had tweeted out his opinion about it all, specifically how he thought it was unfair for Indiana State to have to change teams, and Loyola's really good, and you know Indiana State needed time to prepare and all that kind of stuff. So, Lou, while I'm trying to find this tweet here so I can get it 100% correctly, why don't you give, like, what are your thoughts, like, about having to change an opponent late in the week and how that affected the games this past weekend?
Yeah, I think that's just absolute garbage from that reporter to automatically be like, oh, they're the better team. And like, we both agree, and I think we will, that it's just garbage for both teams, not just for one. Loyola had a whole game plan. You decide different lineups, maybe. You decide maybe whose matchups. And within 2 days, which also, let's not forget, they have to travel. Loyola had to travel. So we had 48 hours before the game time of new notice of the new team. And then we had to travel the day before. So it's not like it was, oh, you have two full 48 hours. No, we had probably a good day and a half. And let's be honest, that other day was the game day. So let's say we had 1 day of preparation, roughly. So I think it's tough on both teams. I think it's just kind of confusing a little bit personally, just to watch the Valley cancel our games before and reschedule them, which is great. And that's the right way with COVID and everything. And then we just found another North Texas team. Again, as I don't know if this was Loyola pushing, it was this Porter saying, hey, we want to play Valley games, get us Indiana State since they just lost Southern. Because we did talk about how you would have thought last time they would have switched around things. So it is interesting that the Valley jumped quick to make it a Valley competition week. Granted, I don't think within 48 hours we would have played another team to the caliber of North Texas. But I think it's just garbage for both teams. And it's just tough. And that's the other thing. It's a COVID year, and this year is just going to be tough with scheduling. Funny enough, we're going to read a tweet where I think the reporters probably just spoke a little too soon, especially with the Indiana State winning the first game. So, Buck, what do you got for us with the tweet?
Yeah, so he says, I'm not blaming anyone or anything but COVID-19, certainly not the Missouri Valley Conference, who is trying to navigate an extremely difficult path, but Indiana State having to play Loyola on extreme short notice is really unfair. You're set up to play teams on short turnarounds and tournaments because you have assistant coaches, pre-scouting, and known potential opponents. This is different. No one looked at Loyola because no one knew they had to. Loyola's in the same boat, but Loyola is an extremely experienced team and the one I picked to win the league. This isn't apples to apples, so unless ISU comes out tomorrow and just doesn't try, I'm viewing these games with a jaundiced eye. It's really not a fair competitive situation. And so, yeah, so I wrote my piece, and I'm, you know, a lot of our listeners might have read it, but I wanted to say, like, first of all, I don't think it's a completely out of left field. Like, I understand where he's coming from. I think it's reasonable. I just also think it's wrong. And I made my stance known. I just said, I think it's equally unfair to both teams. And so then that kind of makes it fair. What was kind of interesting to me is that he actually doubled down on it when he really didn't have to say anything. And I said what I had to say. And then he goes, it's unfair for Loyola too, but let's not try to pretend that Loyola getting Indiana State on short notice is the same thing as Indiana State getting Loyola on short notice when it comes to the rosters. And then Aaron Hunter actually made a good point about how last year they beat us pretty bad in Terre Haute. And yeah, I mean, just like all things considered, even before the game, like I also just find it kind of strange. I know he's not an athlete. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. I don't know. But I don't think that's an athlete's mindset either. Like, I don't think any of those players on either team were thinking, oh, this is so unfair. Like, I'm so upset. Like, I wish we could have played the other team. You know, like, an athlete's mindset is, okay, you know, this is a new challenge, and we're going to take it head on. Like, we're going to play whoever's on the court in front of us, whether that's Loyola, whether that's Indiana State, whether it's North Texas, on and on. So, yeah, I just think it was kind of a biased homer take on it all. And like you said, like, it ended up that we split the series, which I think, like, it goes to prove the point that I think it's unfair to both teams. But Indiana State was picked fourth in preseason Valley rankings to be the fourth best team in the conference, and now with Northern Iowa struggling and Missouri State really surging, you know, they're probably still about there. They're probably still, even though they've dropped a bunch of games, they're probably still about fourth or fifth. So it's a good team. They do as well have veterans, guys who have played in the Valley multiple seasons, and their senior leader in Tyreek Key, who pretty much single-handedly won the game on Sunday for them. So I stick by what I said. I think it's unfair for both teams. And because of that, I think it actually made for some really interesting competition on Sunday and Monday. Yeah, Lou, any more thoughts on that part about it?
Yeah, I just think anyone who puts the word but, just everything before the but means nothing. So this reporter just really just meant to say he was upset. And I'll be honest, yeah, I don't think he's the only one. But again, it's like you said, Let's just be happy we're able to play the games. There are definitely teams who are missing games and they are not able to reschedule. We weren't able to reschedule some of our own games that got canceled already from Duquesne. So the fact that we're able to get to play some games is also maybe a bigger point than missing out on a game completely. It might not have gone the way we wanted, but that this is the year we're going to have. And also this is kind of an expectation on these teams, is you might have a quick turnaround with certain things, and we're playing back-to-back games. So again, it's a new year, it's a new thing. So for this reporter kind of jump the gun with this stuff, I don't know, again, not the mentality I would have. But let's talk about the split of games. What do you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, we got to talk about the new jerseys.
Oh yes,
which, you know, obviously we didn't get the result we wanted, but we looked good doing it. They broke out these new dark mode jerseys, which I personally think are really great. I think for a while we, like, you and I had been talking and chatting amongst ourselves, and I think on the podcast a little bit too, about wanting new jerseys. And I think these are really clean. Like, I think that, you know, the black is a good solid color, not trying to do too much. It's not like some of the UIC jerseys where it's all the Chicago colors, which is still cool, but there is a lot going on with these super simple pretty much black and white, and then the maroon numbers and lining on the wording. And also something that I think the Valley or maybe Loyola is including in a lot of their press releases and stuff is they have a little patch that I'm sure they decided as a team, which does have the Black Lives Matter fist and the word one on it. So, you know, I'm sure they got together as a team and decided that. So good for them. But just really clean jerseys. Glad they broke them out. And I wished they could have played in, like they did in the first half and the second half. And then we wouldn't have to talk about it like this. But Lou, what'd you think about the jerseys?
Yeah, we've been itching for new jerseys for quite a long time. I know there was that floater jersey with like the Chicago skyline on it, and I think that was just kind of almost our dream scenario with a jersey. But like you said, this really matches the clean look, again, with the script of Loyola. The black is, I think, an alternate color that you, again, not the normal white or maroon, which is perfect because we kind of just get out of that, or we need to try to maybe get something new and fresh. So I liked it a lot. Like you said, like most teams, I believe in the NBA and in college, we had that one patch, which is the team's showing solidarity. So a lot of things new with the jersey, but maybe it kind of leads to more alternate jerseys down the road. We don't know if we'll see this black jersey down the road, but it's, again, something to have in our back pocket, and hopefully we can get a different result wearing them next time out.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Twitter page, and I tweeted out a GIF before the game with dark mode and a picture of Darth Vader, and I think I actually might have doomed the team because, like the dark side, you know, you start out real strong, and then in the middle, it looks like everything's going right for you, and then at the end, you know, the opposite, the opponent to the dark side.
Yeah, you done jinxed us there. You done jinxed us. That's what you happened there.
Yeah.
But we can talk about actually what happened besides this jinx right about now. And I think the good summary for the game is second half Tyree Key, but let's talk about the first half. Mm-hmm. What do you got for us, Buck?
Yeah, I mean, I think we got to start off by talking about Tom Welch. He had his career best game, 18 points, 3 rebounds, did set his new career high. His previous career high came against St. Francis at 17, or where he scored 17 points. And before that, I think he had only gotten to 10. So, he scored 18 points in 17 minutes. Like, talk about efficient. He was 7 of 8 from the field. He made his only 3-pointer and 3 for 4 from the free throw line. So, really, you can't ask for much else from Tom Welch. Similarly, I actually thought Braden Norris played super well in the first half as well. I don't remember specifically how many assists he had, but I know he had a bunch kind of towards the end of the first half and at the beginning of the second half. That's when I had been tweeting about it, and he looked really good. My last point before I give it back over to you, Cam, I don't know, Cam didn't really look like himself, if I'm being like perfectly honest. He didn't have a bad stat line, 11 points, 6 rebounds, 2 block shots. But he was missing shots he usually makes. I felt like he wasn't moving like side to side super well on defense. And he didn't have any assists, which, you know, usually he hasn't had as many this year as he did in the previous 2 years, which is just a function, I think, of the offense and having so many talented players around him, especially Braden Norris, who's a great passer. But he just didn't really look like himself. And I think that was one of the biggest things that changed from game one to game two. I just kind of wrapping it up. Tom played really well. I thought Braden played pretty well, like towards halftime, the end of the first and beginning of the second. And Cam just kind of didn't look like himself. So, Lou, what else do you want to add on?
Yeah, I'm just going to highlight again, those are probably the three, again, most talked about players probably of the game. You got Tom just having a terrific game. You couldn't really say much, 18 points, 7 for 8 from field goal. It was really just interesting to see the matchups he had. Again, though, fouling out there with 5 fouls was kind of tough to see. Mm-hmm. And then again, Keith, those are the first 2 fouls so far this season. They had a graphic up from the second game that was interesting that we don't often have guys foul out. But Tom, just phenomenal to find his footing. Again, as I really thought it was going to almost be like an Ahir night with North Texas, where maybe it's a different guy stepping up and having the star of the game, which I was really hoping for, and I was totally fine with. I was fine with handing that torch over to the next person or the next guy up, and I thought that was going to be Tom Welch's night. He had a great night. Just the team overall really didn't benefit from that night, and that's nothing on him. It's just kind of just, again, the situations, maybe the rotations could have been a little bit better. I'd have to say, Cam, on your point, yeah, it just didn't look like he was fully there to a full extent, or I guess just the 100% Cam we saw. We both talked after, maybe was he a little fatigued or something. Again, I think he answered that with a big no in the second game. But again, 5 for 12, not great, but he only played 22 minutes. That's where it was also intriguing. I don't know what was going on with Porter and his game plan for Cam. So I do think there was probably something there. As far as I saw, I did not read anything that Cam had any injury or anything. So there had to have been something, let's be honest. He only played 22 minutes. Something's up. I actually have pretty much a major issue with Braden after that first game. And I think it was just a tough situation, but goes 2 for 12 from field goal, 2 for 10. I know Porter's this mentality of shoot threes no matter what, but at a certain point, you got to kind of call off the pretty much the orders and give it to someone else. I love the 9 assists. I can't deny it. He found Tom Welch in perfect spots. It was just then at the end of the game, it was just really sloppy play. He had, I think, 2 back-to-back turnovers, and it was just tough. And again, as I'm not saying we can blame it on one or two plays back-to-back, it just, with this game and how close it was, the second half really was the flip side and kind of a smack in the face. So my only thing is maybe Braden just needs to figure out the press and how to dribble up the ball. 9 assists, you know how he knows how to feed guys. He just needs to maybe calm it down with the turnovers, with 5 turnovers. So that's it. Lucas was an interesting one, had 10 points. He was not too great, 2 for 7 from field goal. So really just an interesting game. I think my biggest question mark is Cam only playing 22 minutes. Something had to have been up, I think. And no assist. It's a weird game if Cam has no assist, let's be honest. He had 2 blocks and no assist. That's a weird game. So that was really tough for me from our Ramblers. But I think the big thing is our team as a whole coming into the second half against Tyreek Key, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. I think the way that they played defense on him, they really didn't play much defense on him.
But good take. I was about to ask what defense in the second half, but yeah.
Yeah, I think, and we'll talk about this when we get to game two, but I it was just strange. I felt like at times Indiana State was seeking out ways to attack against Braden Norris. And most of the time that included, you know, Tyreek Key off-ball screens or Tyreek Key getting the ball and someone coming and setting a screen, because we switch on everything except for Cam down low with the big guys. So that was their plan, and it worked. It worked perfectly. I mean, he did have a ton of free throws, which is partially because at the end of the game we were fouling in order to stop the clock. But, you know, he did finish with 31 points. A lot of that, you know, 3 for 5 from three. But 12 of his points are from the free throw line, and he was attacking the basket. I also really thought someone who I didn't know about at all, who I thought played pretty well, is his last name is Larry. I think he's a freshman guard. He gave us fits on defense. He only has 1 steal, which I don't think that's correct. But I know he was really, especially on the press, giving our guards lots of fits. That press was that was probably the most frustrating thing. I don't mind letting, like, Tyreek Key is an incredible scorer. He's up there with AJ Green just in terms of like ability to score. So like he's gonna get his most of the time. But what was frustrating for me is like the press is something that like every basketball player should have encountered the press in their basketball careers many times. Like, it's not this new thing or weird, like, little fluke. Like, every basketball player has that. A lot of, like, when I was playing basketball in, like, high school, like, some teams would just run that kind of standard. And it's not really a difficult thing to figure out most of the time. A lot of times it just includes, like, making quick decisions, passing the ball, and moving, and moving, and moving, and moving, and setting screens to get guys open. And it just didn't seem like, I don't know. Like,
You're right. I have to take it. It wasn't on Braden. It just didn't seem like there was movement. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, and I think it's because one of the reasons is because I think our half court offense is so patient. It's you know, the extra pass and don't be selfish and look for the, you know, look for the next pass, the next opening. But that's not helpful when you're trying to break a press. In order to break a press, like I said, you make quick decisions, you pass the ball and you move. Or you have a guy who has a one-on-one matchup and can bring the ball up the floor. I don't know why Marquise Kennedy or Braden Norris or Keith Clemens can't just bring the ball up the court until a second defender gets to him. These guys are all really skilled ball handlers, especially Kennedy and Clemens, who, like, I'm sure have played plenty of one-on-one in their time and can handle the ball up the court. So it becomes a problem when you have two defenders, and then that's when you really need to break the press. So that was just really frustrating for me to watch because it's not a difficult concept, which makes me think that they haven't practiced it a lot, or they're getting directions from the coaching staff that isn't particularly helpful. In my eyes, that's why we lost, because we couldn't figure out the press. I don't care. I mean, obviously Tyree Key scoring 31 points, that's a lot of points. But we definitely could have won this game even if Tyree Key scored 30 points, if we would have just taken advantage of three or four more possessions and not turned the ball over 15 times. If we would have turned the ball over 10 times, you get five more shots at least. We're going to make two or three of those shots. So, that's probably as much as I'm going to rant about the press, because that was just extremely frustrating for me.
I think the press is one thing. I think the other thing is it had to be a lack of defense on Tyree Key. Just overall, I think Jake Laveria, he had a lot of rebounds, at least a lot more than I thought he should have gotten. And that was just a frustrating thing to see. And overall, it's just the 49 points in the second half. You hold them to 27 in the first half, and they just blow up and score 49 points, then come in the second half. So I think that was just really interesting. I don't think really the second half play has really anything to do with, oh, we only had 48 hours. I think the first half really showed you, okay, we have a game plan, let's stick to this. It just wasn't then executed like it was in the first half in the second half. So that's the only thing I would say on that. And it was just tough, really, to watch.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you're right about the game plan part of it. Otherwise, like some of the bench guys, I thought Clemens and Kennedy both played well. Before I say that, how many turnovers they each have? Yeah, I mean, Clemens had two, Kennedy had none. I know Marquise got a lot of his buckets towards the end of the game, but he did have a really nice three. He did have a really nice three earlier in the game, which is good to see from him. Cooper, 2 for 5. One of his threes was towards the end. I don't know. I mean, I was kind of bummed Ahir was not really a factor at all. And then Braden Orr struggled and Cam struggled. So it just, yeah, it's just kind of a bummer of a game. I think it's one that the guys would want to have back. Especially like you said, after we played so well in the first half, and then the second half was pretty horrible. I don't know if there's any other way to put it.
No, there really isn't, and it was just sad to see a game plan work decently well in the first half, especially then in the second half. I think it just kind of fell apart, and maybe it just happened to be I'm one for having senior leadership, and just not having Cam on the court really could affect the gameplay. I'd love to know what happened. But again, is that game kind of, it's in the ready in the books. I just think this is important for a team, Indiana State, that only lost by, I think, 6 points to Missouri State. They got blown out by Drake. So we really got to be careful now moving forward with playing Drake and then playing Missouri State, what type of tempo, what type of defense we're really showing. And the second half team that showed up on the first game wasn't the team I hoped to see moving forward. But then again, that's why we had a second game, and it turned out a lot better than the first one.
Yeah, actually, I didn't realize you had said that Indiana State scored 49 points in the second half. Well, in the second game, they only scored 48 points total. So
there you go. Exactly. So Again, maybe because Cam played more. That's a great segue, because it's wondering what was the difference. Like, really, in reality, I don't think we can really blame this. I think we can blame a slow start or maybe guys not being fully prepped. But the first half was pretty great. The second half, I just don't know what happened. And I think maybe it leans on where was Cam in the second half. Mm-hmm. And that whole, if Tom Welch is going off, maybe have, like you said, maybe put someone who's a good big guy next to Tom Welch to kind of balance off the big guys. But maybe, again, I think Porter doesn't know what to do with two power forwards or two, at least a small forward and a power forward. And maybe he just was shocked that they might actually work. But, again, mm-hmm. the second game was a little different.
Yeah, the second game was different. So final score of the second game, 58-48. Much more of a defensive battle. Definitely less shot making in this game as well. But the defense on both sides, I think, was really amped up. For us, Cam had the best game. He finished with 16 points, 8 rebounds, and 2 assists, and block and a steal. And he moved into some rarefied air with a couple other legends in the Valley, which we'll talk to actually after the game. But besides that, I thought Uguak had a really nice second half. I also thought Lucas played outstanding defense, kind of a typical Lucas Williamson line, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block. He played extremely well. I thought Keith Clemens actually played really well off the bench, gave us 27 really important minutes, hit 2 really big threes in the first half that kind of jump-started the offense when we were struggling a little bit. Otherwise, like, you know, we only scored 58 points, so no one really scored a bunch of points. Besides Cam, the next leader was Uguak with 9. But it was really like the Cam show on offense and Lucas on defense that led us to victory. So, Lou, what were your takeaways from this game?
Yeah, no, I think because of it was such a defensive-minded game, we didn't shoot the 3 at all well, 28% from the entire game. And Porter talked about that. It was really interesting. He goes, we know we didn't shoot well, but that was kind of something you would hope you kind of get out of, and maybe it's a slump. But I think a really great stat I just have to highlight is second-half free throws, we were 9 of 10. Mm-hmm. So I think second-half free throws are a huge thing. We only did win by 10, so say we miss 4 of those, this game is a little bit different. So I think that was a great thing to see. Again, Ahir only played 17 minutes. I thought that was a little strange. Again, for Marquise Kennedy, I'd love to see a little bit more. He missed some threes. So, again, I just think overall the game was kind of not one star except for Cam going off with 16 points. But really, it just felt like a really defensive, tight, close game. Not one breakaway play. Again, we held the lead, but it was back and forth. We held the lead in the second half, but it was back and forth throughout the whole entire game. And I think just kind of a statement to really a different type of play from the night before. And maybe it might be this whole night before everyone's tired, because both teams put up 70 points each in the game one, and now we're putting up low scoring games. So for a team like Indiana State to see them put up 48 points an entire game and then put up 49 points in one half in the first game is just really interesting. But happy to see them get the W. I think it was very much needed the way we played the first game. Nothing crazy with the turnovers, which I was happy to see. And we finally saw something that I think you've been at least hoping for, and that was Tom Welch and Cameron Krubig. For however few minutes it was, we did technically see it. And yeah, like you said, there was a big big possession where we took the lead for it.
Yeah, I think in the first half, it was a decent amount of time. I think it was like 3 or 4 minutes. I think they were in at like 5 minutes left to go in the first half. And then Tom came out like in the last minute or so. I think they were down. I should have taken more notes on this. I was just way too excited.
I'll look it up. You keep talking. I'll look it up.
I think they were down like 4. And then by the end of the first half, they went up 3. I think that's what it was. Or they went up 4. So it was pretty good. I actually, like, for as good as I enjoyed it, there were like the one thing I was so certain was that the rebounding was actually going to be great. And there, I think during that time, Indiana State got at least 2, if not 3 offensive rebounds. A couple of them were, or one of them was super weird, super long rebound. But I think scoring-wise, it was great. There was even – I know what happened in the second half, too, because there was a couple times where they were trying to do high-low post action with Cam and Tom, and he had Tom open two times in a row, and he just – Cam's passes just weren't great. Like, they just – they neither of them were horrible, but neither of them worked, and he had him open. So a little bit of a bummer. Like, it's almost like – it's almost like they didn't even practice it, and Porter just said, okay, we got to try something else. So he put Tom out there with Cam, and I think it has so much potential. I'm gonna keep talking about this, and that's why I joked about it at the very beginning, because like I'm confident, I'm sure it will work, and I think we saw a little bit of it, and I really really hope that they stick to it rather than just threw it out there and hoped it worked and then get away from it. But I thought that was super exciting to see. I'm glad that he did it. Even if he doesn't use it often, maybe just once every other game to kind of keep teams on their heels and catch them off guard, I think that could be really effective too. But it's just great for Tom. Tom has been like, I'm almost nervous to say it, but I think Tom has been one of our top three most efficient scorers. And by that, I mean like taking advantage of opportunities. And when you have an open shot, hitting it more often than not, or pick and roll, taking advantage of those opportunities. He only had 4 points. So it's not like he went crazy this game, but he was 2 for 3. He had a chance. He should have made an and one opportunity, should have made the free throw. Well, only played 12 minutes this game. He just he figures out ways to like score the basketball when he's given the chance. And besides Cam and I don't even know, like Braden occasionally, but Braden has this really inefficient nights. I think it is he's a very efficient scorer, and if we increase his role a little bit, we're going to see his scoring and his production increase as well.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I would just have to – I don't know. I'm for Tom Welch, but the way I envision Tom Welch is more of that role player off the bench. And I do think the way he's been playing, he has the potential to be that sixth man of the year. Mm-hmm. So my only thing is I think it's just a Porter trying to still figure out his lineup. Because how do you have a here have an amazing game before both these games and then not really have a role in any of these games? And again, as I understand, you got to go with the hot hand. So it is. And then with Porter not playing Cam and Tom as often, and then Cam not playing that much in the first game. So I think we're still trying to answer and trying to figure that out. Granted, a here and Cam, according to traditional rules, are both seniors. So it's not like something we can plan for the future. So maybe it is time we plan for Tom Welch and what his role is. I do think I would prefer, and this is just me, not the whole podcast, I prefer Tom more of an off-the-bench role, of course. And I think, though, I would love to see him and Ahir and him and Cam both get it. He needs to be, in my opinion, the guy that gives the breather to Cam, gives the breather to Ahir, but works with both of them, because I think he can be great with Ahir. Ahir is definitely one to give the pass up just like Cam does when he gets close. Again, he's not as great of a passer as Cam. I'm definitely going to admit that. But if he's close to the rim and someone's right there, he's known to dish it under. So there's a whole bunch of things. I just joke when you say open shot, it made me think I did think Cam and Tom both missed a few wide open layups, I do believe, last night in the second game. So just little things there to tighten up. But I think we kind of have a core three down low, and that's the rotation between Cam, Ahir, and Tom. And I really do like it, because I think, like we've said, Ahir plays the five and Tom plays the stretch four on smaller lineups. And then when Cam is in, maybe Ahir needs a break, stuff like that. So I really do think that whole lineup can work. And you even saw last night, Braden had no problem feeding Tom down low. So I think it's not more of a question of, oh, will it work? It's more of a question they need more games all three together in a rotation. I think that's what it needs to be, a constant rotation of those three. And I just have to say is the one kind of quiet spot with the second game was kind of Tate Hall in this series. Tate Hall was 2 of 6 in this second game. Not really that much of a presence, in my opinion. that we saw maybe in the beginning of the season. So, again, I think it's more of the – it was a defensive-minded game, and minutes were spread out. A lot of guys played in the second game, so really interesting to see. One highlight I just loved, and, again, this just got me really started, but the commentator said something that I had to say, was Marquise Kennedy driving to the rim, and he was 1-for-4 and over 3 from 3. But his one bucket was a beautiful drive to the rim, like absolutely beautiful. So it just got me really, really excited for, again, what could Marquise Kennedy do? And, again, already sixth man of the year, so a lot of hope. But an interesting one, you Baylor Hebb played. Cooper didn't really play much, yet he played in the first game. So, again, I chalked this series up, and what this game, these two games kind of taught me was that the rotations are still kind of in question. No Paxson in either game, if I'm correct. Again, we don't know what the situation with Damari is. So just really rotation is kind of a big question mark for me. What comes out of these series, I don't know, besides the fact that we have one night where it's really great defense and one night where there was no defense at all to be found. So I think whatever rotation finds that middle ground of a defensively minded team but quick on offense. So it's a lot of questions left unanswered after the series, especially with our first loss in conference play. So a little tough to see against Indiana State. Was really hoping for a split series with Drake, but now all the means just to go 2-0 against Drake.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about Marquise, because I agree with you. For the first, you know, handful of games or six games, I was kind of wondering, I was like, maybe he just needs some more time. Not that he's playing, it's not that he was playing bad. He just didn't seem to be the same player as last year. And I was trying to figure out, like, what's the difference? Like, why is he not seem as explosive? And, of course, like, when you have more talented players, everyone has a different role. So that's a part of it. But I actually think it's more of a team goal of theirs, which we've heard all throughout the season, that Porter wants us to take more threes. And although that's great, I do agree with it. I like seeing Tate, Braden, Cooper, Lucas, Clemens, like all those guys shoot threes, even here a little bit, Tom a little bit. Marquise, he has a good shot, but that's not what he excels at. Like, he needs to shoot enough where defenders need to respect that, but where he is so good is driving to the basket, making acrobatic plays, getting defenders on their heels so that it opens up more opportunities for Cam in the post and for the shooters around him. And I think that the coaches have been telling all the guards to kind of play the same way, and Marquise doesn't fit that same role as Tate Hall, as Braden Norris, as Lucas Williamson. He's not a pure shooter. He's a slasher. And so I think that is leading to a little bit of hesitation on his part. And even when he's wide open from three, I'd still like to see him take it to the hoop, because more often than not, I think he's going to get guys off guard, off balance, be able to get a layup around them, avoid the contact, that sort of thing. And I think that will give him more confidence to shoot. I think some basketball players, some guards and forwards, like to shoot and then drive, because shooting kind of brings the defenders out on them and then they can get past them. I think Kennedy's the opposite. I think he needs to drive first, establish that confidence, get a layup early, and then shoot later in the game. So, I don't know. It's just kind of something that's been rumbling in my head for the first, I guess you could say, half of the season. And I think I figured it out in this series. I think that's what it is. Do you have any thoughts on that? Like, does that even make sense, or did I just talk about a lot of garbage? Well,
you did talk a lot, but I think it does make sense, because Porter's has said his mentality is, we're shooting a lot more threes. We're shooting a lot more threes. But I don't know if it's really worked. It takes away nearly from a guy who I know can score threes, and that's Marquise Kennedy. But then you watch a beautiful drive to the lane, and it's like, boom. And then last night, if I'm correct, didn't Keith Clemens had a beautiful dish underneath. He was right there, drove, and then just dished it underneath. Or that even could have been in the first game. No matter what, both plays to me represent that some of these guys are just natural guys and players to go to the rim and be aggressive, get to the foul line. Because, again, is if you get an and one, that gives you the opportunity for a three-point play. And last time I checked, even though our percentages isn't great, a free throw is a little bit closer and a lot closer than a three. So, again, is it's not a guarantee all the time, so I understand that. It's just it is confusing, I think, when we have this whole new kind of game plan of shoot more threes, but it's not really being utilized, I think, as well as Porter thought. I can understand maybe it's a thing, and I'm actually in the background trying to see where we are at nationwide with three-point shots, and we might be pretty far behind in three points attempted. So I understand Porter's kind of frustration maybe. And opening up the court. But I think with some guys like Marquise Kennedy, and especially Marquise Kennedy, but some guys who are just natural guys to drive, that's where it also can be more utilized, is to drive to the basket. So I think it's something to look out for moving forward. I think I understand we have such lethal weapons around the perimeter, so that's why. And actually, on ESPN, out of 353 teams, we were 333rd three-point attempts. So we actually are pretty much nearly last in three-point attempts. So maybe we'll see compared to last year what this year might bring with that. I think it's just it should only be really focused on certain guys. To kind of blanket, like you said, all the coaches are telling all the guards to play kind of the same game plan. I think you can't really do that. With guys like Cooper, yes, that's what you're going to – with Braden. Braden, we've seen him get blocked right at the rim, and it was kind of ugly. It was kind of tough to see. So keep Braden at the perimeter. That's totally fine. Just when you need to get to the rim to kind of shake things up, you need to then give it to the guys who are just natural-born drivers to the lane. And that's, again, our Marquise Kennedy is just the poster child, and even Keith Clemens of just driving and being so aggressive to the rim.
Yeah, I also I agree with you as far as like shooters and drivers go. And I think that we're due for a good shooting night. Just with the past three games, even Sunday night when we scored 71 points, we still only shot 33% from 3 points. So I think we're really due for a good shooting night. I don't want to see everyone change it up, but I like specifically like Marquise, I would really like to see him drive more. But like you said too, Braden, Tate, all Cooper, all those guys, they should keep shooting because they are really good shooters. We know they're really good shooters, so keep shooting and they'll start to fall, I think.
Hey, you miss all the shots you don't take.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, overall, I would say I'm okay with what happened this weekend. Considering we're playing on the road, considering they only had, 48 hours or less to prepare, Indiana State is, even though they just won their first conference game, I still think they're a good team. I still think they're in the top half of the Valley. They've had a really tough start playing Drake and
Missouri State,
who's just on fire. So I think they'll pick up these games against Illinois State and Evansville and, even take at least one from Northern Iowa and so on and so forth. And Valpo, I think they'll sweep them. So I think Indiana State's a team going into the whatever Arch Madness we have. They're going to be a team that's probably getting catching fire late. So, but then this weekend we have two games against Northern Iowa, I believe, at least, unless ESPN isn't caught up with schedule, but I think it's Northern Iowa, right?
Yep. No, it's Northern Iowa, both on the it's actually this time, though, it's interesting. It's the Saturday and Sunday. So this is an interesting one. It's Saturday and Sunday, the 16th and 17th. We'll have both games kind of 5-4. So kind of interesting. But again, is we got you and I, not the team we thought they were going to be in the beginning of the year due to injury. And then just due to other, I guess, situational things with guys not kind of playing to what I thought they would. Again, someone could say it's COVID season and not preparation, but you and I kind of just a team that's trying to compete and trying to stay within competition or striking distance of first, but I think this should be pretty reasonable two wins coming forward.
Yeah, I agree. I'm looking on ESPN right now, and it says the second game is on ESPN. And
yep, it's I have both games on ESPN2.
That's so okay. So then I was looking at that on the ESPN app, and then I go over to like the actual Loyola Chicago website for their schedule, and I see what you're seeing is that both games are on ESPN2. So maybe they're just trying to figure things out, but it looks like at least one of the games is going to be national broadcast, if not both, which would be super cool to play another game on ESPN too. But yeah, like you said, like I think they're struggling. They still have a lot of good players, but when you lose the player of the year, I mean that's just super hard to recover from fully. I think Austin Fife is playing better of late. I think Trey Burhau is doing pretty well, and Noah Carter is always someone who can catch fire. I was actually listening to the coaches' interviews or whatever that they have on the Twitter account, the Valley Twitter account, and Porter just said, you know, like whenever we're playing Northern Iowa, it seems like it comes down to one possession, and he's not expecting it to be any different this time around. He said he was looking forward to like the battle of the big guys, two kind of true centers, and just was talking very highly about all the post players, the centers in our league, whether it's Gage Prim or, you know, Elijah Childs, even though he's kind of more of a forward. There's other guys throughout the league, you know, in the Ravia at Indiana State. There's just a bunch of really big, really good big guys. So I think that he's expecting a battle down low. I would assume Northern Iowa is going to have to account for that. But he also there's some really good questions, actually. One from one of our reporters from the Phoenix, Lou. Not to be confused with Podcast 63 host Lou, but she was asking about Braden Norris and just how important he's been to the team so far this year. And Porter was just saying how Braden's kind of a warrior, and you know his role on defense is evolving, and he's a great passer, a great point guard that he really trusts. And then Harry Schroeder, who we've talked about on here before. Harry was asking about Tom Welch, and he didn't give too much away, but he basically just said that, like, Tom has been playing great, and he loves Tommy, and, you know, his offensive game's really evolving, and, you know, just lots of good things. I think he did mention, I'm trying to remember, I think he mentioned Tom playing with Cam, just that it was good or something, or that it went well, like, didn't say anything more than that, but, and how Tom would have an important role against Northern Iowa, so... I'm looking forward to these games. I think they're both at home, so I think the expectation is that we win both. I think especially Northern Iowa is not the same Northern Iowa team from the beginning of the year or at the end of last year. They don't have AJ Green, which is just, you know, kind of it's hard to put into words like how important he is to that team. So I'm expecting two wins. I really am. I don't know about you, but. I think there'll be close games, but I think so far we've had a battle-tested road to get here, and I think that'll help us out, and hopefully we can bring home two W's Saturday and Sunday. What do you think, Lou?
Yeah, I'm going to say two wins is what I want, and that's what I think we're going to get. Again, as that's what I expected from Indiana State, and things change. Granted now, hopefully things won't change. Everyone stays healthy, won't have a change of schedule to blame anything on, like certain reporters. But I think this team is just a team that doesn't have a true guard leader. And I understand everyone's there on the team still except for AJ Green. But like you said, when you lose your player of the year and AJ Green, a top player in the country, not just in the Valley, it makes a big impact. And there's a big hole that still hasn't been filled. So, but as you mentioned, Porter always notes, you and I as a team that really can play different. Ben Jacobson knows the Valley, knows Loyola. So it's going to be a close one, I think. I think the first game is going to be closer than we think, but I still think the W, and I'm really hoping the second one, you kind of see a lot more of what we had with Illinois State. Again, I think this Loyola team can do what they did to Illinois State to many teams in the Valley. I'm just hoping we see that more on a consistent basis and not like what just happened with Indiana State. So I'm excited. Not really nervous again. No AJ Green, so I think that is left my nerves at the door. But more excited just to get two W's back to back and get more into that win column.
Yeah, for sure. It should be a couple of games, but like you said, hopefully we can win both of them. The other thing I mentioned earlier in the podcast, which I want to talk about now, just kind of quickly, Cameron Krutwig on his accolade that he achieved in the second game. He passed 1,500 points, 800 rebounds, and 300 assists in his career. He joins in the Valley, in Missouri Valley history, he joins Larry Bird, Oscar Robertson, and Hershey Hawkins as the only other players to ever do that.
And I think the only other player to look as good with a mustache.
That's true. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I've seen pictures of Larry Bird with a mustache back in the day, and he Cam just looks infinitely times better than Larry Bird. I'm sure, you know, Larry Bird's better at literally everything else, but Cam's got him in the mustache game for sure.
Agreed.
And I don't think Larry Bird had a Twitter account for his mustache. So, I mean, that's just got to seal the deal.
It has to.
I can't find the historical, you know, I'm pretty sure Twitter existed back then, so it just seems weird. You know, it just got to mean that Cam's mustache is better. But in all seriousness, super interesting and just like impressive accolade for Cam. It just goes to show that he, I think when it's all said and done, is going to be, especially if he wins Player of the Year, he's going to be the best Loyola Rambler in the modern era. Like, of course, we can't talk about 60s and 70s when we won national championship and so on, but especially since like the year 2000, I think he's up now with Marcus Towns and Clayton Custer and Milton Doyle. But just with everything he's accumulated and is still accumulating, if he adds that Player of the Year or another deep tournament run, there's just going to be no question. And this is just another thing that is just, he achieved. And I think he's still got a chance to be, I think I was looking at some of the stats. I think he's top 10 in rebounds. I'm pretty sure he's top 10. I know he's number one in field goal percentage in Loyola history. I think he's top 10 in scoring, or he's just short of it. And in assists as well, he's not in the top 10. And I think he would have to, I think number 10 has like 348 or something, and he's at 302. So I think he would have to average like three or four assists the rest of the way. But, I mean, that's still possible too. So it's just kind of a cool thing for him. I know he enjoys it, but he always just talks about how much his teammates around him are what got him there. So humble dude for sure. Lou, I don't know, any thoughts?
No, just fantastic to see. I think there's like you said, he's had a great career so far, and there's a lot more to go, especially this year. A beautiful run would be great to see. I think another bid to the NCAA tournament with the Valley, though, it would be really great. I would love to see him get an individual award, but if we could get that tournament bid, that would be great.
Yeah, agreed. I think the only other thing we wanted to talk about was the Valley, but I think we might save that for next week just because there's only been a certain amount of games. Like, some teams have only played two, others have played six. So I think it's just kind of fair to wait maybe another week until until teams have played four games at least. But just to note, Missouri State is really hot right now. Yep. And Isaiah Mosley, if he keeps this up, he's going to be Player of the Year. So that's just something to note. I don't want to let that go by, that he's just playing extremely well right now. Something to keep an eye on. And when we play him, we better have a game plan for him, because he is going to torch us if we don't. Lou, any last thoughts this week?
Yeah, just Missouri State, keep an eye out. Can't really sleep on them now. They've had a hot start. Drake, though, still undefeated, so got something to prove with them. And let's not sleep on UNI either. They're not a team that we've really always crushed and dominated like Illinois State, so got to play hard, but excited, though, to get a few wins in the win column.
Yeah, agreed. Also, just kind of a housekeeping note, but both Lou and I have new microphones, so if our voices, they don't sound any better, but at least more clear. Now you can clearly hear how bad we actually sound. So we're kind of working that out and trying to figure out just how to make sure that the sound is better for you all. If anyone has any thoughts or we sound horrible, feel free to DM us and tell us, hey, you got to change this setting on your microphone. We're trying to figure it out. Hopefully it sounds better. But appreciate your patience. If, for instance, I open my water bottle on while we're recording, but it's just, we're working it out and hopefully it sounds better, but I think that'll do it here from Buck and Lou at Podcast 63. Thank you all for listening, and don't forget, go Blurs.